The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionix, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
It's the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. In a minute, we'll be celebrating 25 years on air with Adrian Durham from TalkSport. But first of all, here we are at the University of Salford. It's the 21st Salford International Media Festival. At least that's what it's called now. It's the Nations and Regions Conference part, and Gillian Reynolds from the Daily Telegraph has just been on stage chairing a session about radio indies. Did we learn anything, Gillian?
Well, I think we've learned that people have great expectations that following the Scottish devolution debate and the excitement it caused, that there will be a devolution of BBC powers to the nations, Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales, and the regions. We had four very good speakers, the commissioning editor of BBC Radio Scotland, very useful, the managing editor of TalkSport. We had Will from RIG, who is issuing a stern warning to bosses to get their act together, and a very interesting contribution from Tim Collins, who runs a small commercial radio station in the far west of Ireland, Sligo, and who avails himself of a public fund to make public service broadcasting programs like a drama, like a little documentary, and so on. And we had a very interesting exchange of views, but you could feel the anger welling up from the audience, because in all of this, in all of these ideas, where is the work coming from? When is the BBC going to realize that not everything should run out of London? And that just came bubbling up. And Kath Worrell, who used to work for the BBC and Border Television, made a very interesting contribution to the debate. She said that she thought the BBC had turned its back on the regions, was more and more controlled from the centre, and that it had also significantly lost its friends in high places. And there was a spontaneous round of applause. And it was a really interesting session, because you can see there is a lot of creativity coming out of media schools, coming out of radio stations, coming out of people's heads. Audio has a future. Radio has a future. Whether the independent producer has a future in all of this, I think, remains up for discussion.
They seem to work in television, though, don't they? You know, and you hear a lot of speeches at other parts of the conference, people, even Harriet Harman, really confusing the word media with the word television. You know, people talk about television indies. There is a lot of television independent production being done up here in Salford in the Northwest. We're not seeing as much of that in radio, are we? I just wanted to ask you, as a critic, you spend a lot of your time listening to the radio. What do you think's missing that the independent sector could provide?
I think what the independent sector already provides is a different voice, a different attitude. There's a programme coming up quite soon on Radio 4 in a fortnight or so about a New York stand-up called Latch. And it's made in Scotland, and it has a different voice. It has a different feel to it. You will hear programmes coming out of the Northwest, like the new radio ballads about World War One. Yes, they have the old radio ballads imprint, but they're saying things in their own way. I think what the independents bring to the ear is a new way of looking at things, and certainly we need a way of looking at things that isn't London-directed, London-dominated. This is how we see it. This is what people are tweeting and twittering about. No, let's see what it's like in Huddersfield.
Well, the BBC is very proud of Five Live, isn't it? And we've had a couple of years now of Five Live being based up here. Do you hear a new voice from that station because it's based away from London?
They do more vox pops in Manchester than they used to.
And
Bury. And Bury Market.
It's
always
a serious
good
question. Is there a change
no,
in the voice?
I don't think so. And you know, so many of the presenters are still in London. You can't do Wake Up to Money solely out of Salford. There are things you can do here and things you can't. Have you noticed any difference in children's programmes? In religion? No, not really. No, and I think it's tokenistic. The Northwest Regional Development Agency paid the BBC a great deal of money to induce them to come to Manchester. The buildings they inhabit have 17 years to run on their leases, and I don't know whether that implies the BBC has a permanent faith in Salford, quite frankly.
So maybe what the independent sector could do is it could provide, if it's fundable, producers who are based not just in Manchester, but in Carlisle or in Gloucester or in Plymouth or in, you know, in other parts of the UK?
Well, one of the big changes in all of broadcasting is that technology now is lighter, more personal. Any fool can operate it, even me. And therefore, you still need training, you still need thought, you still need collaboration between people, because an idea always runs better on two sets of wheels rather than one. But I think what we're missing is a broad feeling of what it's like to live in the United Kingdom. I know quite a lot now, since the devolution debate, about what it's like to live in Scotland. I know very little about Wales. I get a feeling of Northern Ireland from the drama, usually on Radio 3, a bit on Radio 4, very few features. But I really would like to know what life is like on the Somerset Levels after the floods. Where are the radio docks? Nowhere.
Final question, Gillian. The Archers. WTF.
I happen to think that The Archers is on the upswing. This is an unfashionable view, but I happen to think, for once, they've got the old characters back. Peggy has more of a character than she's had in years. So does Jill. Meaty parts. The stories come out of the characters. And I've written about this for my column this week. I don't know what David Blunkett's on about, except a bit more free publicity for himself. The Archers is on the up.
Gillian Reynolds, thank you. So, Ashley Byrne from Made in Manchester, you've produced the session. What did we learn?
I think we learned that the UK radio independent production sector outside London is thriving. I think there was it was a packed house, wasn't it? Lots of people there, and they were determined to have their voice heard, I think.
Do you think that the BBC is genuine about wanting to have more? I mean, we've seen all the commissioning editors here, apart from Radio 4. Not a bad turnout. Do you think they're genuinely keen on using more independents from outside the M25?
Well, the proof would be in the pudding or the eating or whatever they say. I think it's all about culture, isn't it, really? You know, I think in some respects you have to physically move things and people for them to think differently in many ways. You know, it's happened with Radio 5 Live and they do think differently, but, you know, unfortunately they haven't got the spend on independent production that Radio 4's got. So until we get Radio 4 or Radio 2 doing that kind of thing, then we won't see the difference that needs to be made in the independent production sector across the UK.
Your company's called Made in Manchester. Do you want to make more programmes for the network about Manchester, about the North West, or do you want to make programmes about anything but make them in the North West?
Yeah, it's about using the talent within the North West, about using the production base here and utilising the people that are here to make programmes that are about anywhere in the world, really, not just about Manchester. You know, it could be made in the Midlands, made in Yorkshire, whatever. Made in Manchester is just a brand in that sense. But, you know, we've been going for 10 years now and we do programmes right across the board in every genre and for every network. And we just want to see the BBC sort of recognise that, really, not just with us, but with other independent production companies around the UK who have been doing similar things. You know, I can name quite a lot of companies that do things right across every genre. They just need that extra little bit of impetus financially and they could grow hugely.
Steve Hewlett, famous radio broadcaster, is there enough radio at this conference that you're chairing?
Well, there's more radio now than there's ever been before, as far as I can see. And, you know, radio is becoming a bigger part of the picture. When I say radio, I think let's call it audio. So radio, podcast, and the rest of it. I mean, it's growing like Topsy. People are doing their own things all over the place, and it's converging. So now, you know, you don't need a radio station or a radio or a channel, you know, or a schedule, you know, to make an impact. I mean, as I said, you know, earlier, the Mind Media Awards last night, one of the most, you know, well-celebrated awards was for a girl who's actually still at school, I think, from the Northeast, who does her own blog and podcast and stuff like that on her own issues, and it's extraordinary. So
everyone's talking about Serial, aren't they?
They are. Have you listened to it?
Yes, absolutely. Have you? What do you think of it? I mean, you're a proper journalist, so what do you make of it?
Oh, look, I think it's really interesting, but there's a couple of interesting things about it. It's taken a huge amount of work over a long time to get to this point. I mean, first of all, it's not commissioned by a broadcaster, which means the episodes can be different lengths, etc., etc., etc. You know, so it's freer than broadcasting. I'm not sure any broadcaster would have commissioned it for that reason. The thing is, I wonder how they've paid for it. The idea of having a team, there's at least two people, and probably three, who've been on this for most of a year. In radio terms, as you will appreciate, where people get 2 weeks to make a one-hour documentary, if you're lucky, and that's at Radio 4, which funds it more generously than anybody else. Just think of the difference. A year for 12 episodes? I don't think so.
On the other hand, what is great is deconstructing what it's like being a journalist.
Yes.
Covering a story, which is something we often don't...
Content-wise, I think it's fantastic. I'm really enjoying it. I think she's got great delivery. It's an interesting mixture of things that they're discovering and things they discovered a long time ago. I mean, you know, the idea that it's happening in real time, of course, is some way off the truth, because it's quite obvious that they're putting things in they've had all along. And so, you know, we're in that sense, we're being told a story, and nothing wrong with that, just as a documentary would tell you a story. So although it feels of the moment, it actually, most of it sort of isn't. But I say the main point, so look, I think it's a great show. I think Radio 4 would be thrilled to have had it, although they could never have got their heads around commissioning it. But the other thing is, who would pay people to spend that long doing this kind of thing? I just don't see how on earth. You in the UK, I don't see anyone who'd do that, not even Radio 4.
Back to the agenda. Here we are in Salford, final question. Briefly as you will, that's your phrase, by the way. I'm sorry to steal it.
Sorry.
Briefly if you will. Are we going to see, do you think, more independently made programming on the BBC coming from outside the M25?
Almost certainly. Well, yes. I mean, look, it's already there in significant quantity. And you know, as people have pointed out, some of the BBC's best dramas now are being made by teams that are not in London. They're in Wales, they're in Cardiff, and there are indies here in the Northwest. You know, this is happening. So, yes, we'll see a lot more coming from outside London. But I think the other thing is, the really important point is that what this conference represents is what David Plowright first said when he 21 years ago. This is about the non-metropolitan voice, and it's a battle that's never won. And so I hope the conference will go from strength to strength. I think it needs to be a bigger event. I think it needs more input from the nations, you know, to really kind of, you know, to refind, in a sense, to refind its kind of purpose, because so much has been achieved. The conference and the efforts and the things that it represents could quite easily begin to sort of flutter a bit, when really what's needed, as Peter Salmon said, is to keep the foot on the accelerator.
Did you notice there's a man just pushed past you wearing some Google glasses?
Yeah, I didn't notice that, no.
If that's not cutting edge and modern, I don't know what it is.
I wonder if we're on YouTube as we speak.
I'll go and talk to him. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
I found him. He's called Andy Meir. Why are you wearing Google Glass?
Well, I'm a professor at the University of Salford in science communication and digital media. And so I do research on how the technology can be used in different contexts. So we filmed a dance last week. I've put them on athletes at the Olympic Games. And so it's exploring how this new wearable technology can be used in all kinds of settings.
And you're drinking wine while wearing it. What are you actually... I mean, I think you're looking at me while I'm talking to you, but are you? Or what are you
actually
looking at?
The technology is actually designed for you to look underneath it. So it's a bit like your glasses rim, which is all I can see, really. So the lens is just above the line of sight, and it sees what you see. So whilst I'm looking at you, it's recording what I'm seeing.
Okay, although, and are you checking me out on Google while we speak?
Funny you should say that, because last year they launched an app that did precisely that, but actually Google banned it. So it's not technically legal at this point to do that, much like many things, though.
Thank you, Andy.
You're welcome.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, MuseBoss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Time now on the Radio Today programme for the latest radio news. This week, Ben Cooper, chairman of the Radio Academy, has written to members explaining last week's announcement and called an AGM that'll take place on Wednesday the 10th of December at New Broadcasting House. Talking of the BBC, it's continuing to experiment switching off medium wave transmitters at a number of BBC local radio stations. In the next few weeks, they include BBC Radio Humberside, Lancashire and Devon. And Steve Unger will be acting chief executive of Ofcom when Ed Richards leaves at the end of the year, The regulator is already searching for its new permanent CE. And that's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
In our constant quest to meet the opinion formers and the great celebrities of UK radio, we've come to Hatfields, which is just near the South Bank in London, and we found a man celebrating 25 years in radio. Your silver jubilee, Adrian Durham. How does that feel?
It feels good, actually. I thought it might last for 5 minutes, and it's lasted 25 years, so it feels fantastic, I've got to say. I do feel a little bit old, though. So somebody said to me yesterday, well, here's to the next 25 years. I was thinking, wow, will I be retired by then?
Well, you'll never be as old as I am. So, okay, most important question. How do you rate Arsenal's chances in the Champions League?
They should be doing better. They'll get through the group. That's about it. It might make the quarterfinals with
Sanchez.
You're
not a big fan of the Arsenal, are you?
No. Listen, what people don't know is the girl I live with is a massive Arsenal fan.
I love that woman.
Creates tension.
Who knows?
At times. We have many an argument about it. All good-natured, of course. But it's just something that I threw in. I was at the Champions League final in 06. Arsenal lost 2-1, of course. And as I came away from the ground, I was thinking, where do they go from here? Henry had another year, then he was gone. Vieira had gone. Ashley Cole had gone. All this sort of stuff. There were lots of things happening. A big time of change for Arsenal. I couldn't see where they were going with the players he was signing. You know, he wasn't signing those great players that he used to sign, Vieira, Petit and Henry. And I just thought this could be a really fallow period for Arsenal. And so it proved. And, you know, all I did was say that, and everybody thinks I hate Arsenal. It was just a prediction of how they're going to be. But we have some fun with it. Let's put it that way.
I think what it is a sign of, and I'm interested in how you approach this kind of topic. Do you think you're at your best on the air when you're being adversarial and controversial? You know, do you, when you have a little team meeting with Goffey or your producers, do you sit there and say, I'll tell you what, I'll go on there and say, I think Roy Keane's a really nice guy, or whatever it is, but just something to make callers angry and want to come back at you?
No, I mean, we never have those meetings where I say to Darren, I'll say this and you say that, and then people will get all angry and they'll take your side or my side. We actually both have opinions on stuff. And if those opinions are the same, if they concur, then we don't sort of manufacture, you know, an opinion that neither of us believe in. But the truth is, I think both of us as well, actually, and that's probably why it works, is that we are both opinionated. So I'll watch a game of football, like the Manchester Derby yesterday, and I'll come away with a dozen opinions about the game. Now, yeah, I suppose in the overall scheme of things, it won't actually matter that much. It's just another game of football, but the reality is I watch a game and I have passionate opinions about it. So I don't have to make stuff up. I don't have to be adversarial. It's just those are the opinions I have. So as an example, I watched the game yesterday. Everybody talks about the Smalling red card. And for some time I've been saying, Chris Smalling, you know, is he going to kick on? He's been there a little while now. Is he going to establish himself in the United team, and then the England team? Or is he just not at that level? Will he end up at Sunderland? You know,
can there be a worse fate?
But, you know, and that some people will see that as controversial, or I don't see it as controversial. It's just an opinion about a footballer, and you know, I don't see that as particularly adversarial.
One of the interesting things about your relationship on air is that you're the Southerner and he's the bloke from Yorkshire. But actually, your career started up there, didn't it?
It did.
And what was the beginning of radio for you?
Well, first of all, geographically, I'm from Peterborough. Is that the South? Or is that the Midlands?
No,
is it East Anglia?
No, it's probably the East Midlands, isn't it?
It's not the North. So,
no, it's definitely not on the North.
But I don't think it's the South. But anyway,
it probably shouldn't be on the map at all, shouldn't it? Peterborough, shouldn't it be just kind of wiped away?
Well, I was relieved to leave. There's some nice villages around it. But anyway, I did. I started up North. I was at school, born and brought up in Peterborough, did my A-levels there, and then went to university in Hull. Part of the reason I went there was because I'd started to really love rugby league. It's a rugby league city, Hull, or certainly was then. The university was right for me because it was politics as well, but I started to get into the university radio station as a bit of fun, just broadcast across the campus and to the halls of residence. I just spun some records, really. I didn't have any particular opinions on football or anything at that point. I just wanted to play some music on the radio. The local station wanted some help sports-wise, so I went to help out. And
that was Viking, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Viking in Hull. And seemingly in no time at all, I was on air doing match reports, and it was kind of living the dream for me, really, because from the age of 3 or 4, you know, I'd worked out what radio was. I was listening to radio, particularly sport on radio, and thought, wow, what a job. That's the job I want to do. So I wasn't even one of those who wanted to be a footballer. I recognised pretty early on I was never going to make it as a footballer. So listening to football on the radio, that was huge for me, and that's the career I wanted.
And you also, you know, like a number of other people that I know in sports radio, like Simon Cross, who's, you know, inventor of Fighting Talk and what have you, you did one of those telephone services, didn't you? The kind of pre-internet online thing.
Yeah, people ask me about it. I started doing radio reports, match reports for local radio. I did a course in radio journalism at the London College of Printing. And then everybody was struggling to get a job. You know, so you went freelance. And I started to pick up some work at Team Talk, which was based in Leeds. And it was just covering football, cricket, greyhounds, horse racing, doing commentary on all of these. But it was a great little team we had there. It was a job that had real prospects to go into the management of the company and everything, but I did it for about a year and then realised it's not radio, and that's really where I want to be. So despite the fact it was a great place to work and the prospects were great, I took a massive pay cut and left to go into local radio and struggle financially from there on.
So how is the... not just the relationship with Goffey, but just doing a double header. I mean, that's pretty much what TalkSport does. It's what Radio 5 does a lot, but not always. How does that work for you in terms of who does what and who's in charge and who's kind of pointing the finger?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I did a one-off with Piers Morgan recently. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Never met him before. Was a little bit dubious, I'll be honest.
He's a tosser, isn't he? Except he is an Arsenal fan.
That's what people say, but do you know what? I actually thought, what a good guy, because he came into the meetings, he treated everybody equal, there was no superiority about him, there's no ego about him at all.
Must want a job.
I was pleasantly surprised. It was really good. But with him, I kind of sat back a little bit because I wanted to hear what he had to say, and I felt the audience wanted to hear what he had to say. So there were times when we got involved, had little arguments here and there about Arsenal. But with Goffey, it's slightly different. And all the co-presenters I've worked with, Ian Wright, Mickey Quinn, Rodney Marsh, you know, they've all been very different. And I think it's one of the things that people might not readily realise, that you actually have to work out how to get the best out of those people. Now, with Darren, at first, everybody said, what's a cricketer doing talking about football? I was fine with it because I knew he's a football fan, passionate and a good guy. But you have to work out how to make him credible to the audience. And I think he's done fantastically with that. He works really hard. He watches a huge amount of football. He goes to football as well. So I think that he has really made that happen for
himself.
Do
you feel, as I do, that actually you are a more equal pairing on the air than when you started? That it started off in a sense being your show with him guesting, and now it feels very much like a co-presentation.
You're spot on, absolutely. I think it's down to him being more confident. I think at first, I don't think you'll mind me saying that at first when people questioned why he was doing the show, an ex-cricketer and all that, it kind of got to him a bit. And then he thought, well, if I just knuckle down and do this, you know, and just be me, then it should be fine. But you're right, and I don't enjoy those shows where it's meant to be two people presenting and it actually turns out to be one interviewing the other. Sometimes that's by necessity. If you've got a special guest one-off presenter, sometimes it will become that because they're not comfortable in the role and it takes a little bit of time. But yeah, I think there is some equality about it as well. But I think to get the best out of Darren, you leave me to do some of the nuts and bolts, going in and out of breaks, stuff like that. And that allows him to be more creative and more comfortable and confident with what he's doing. And I think that's how we've got the best out of him. So,
you were talking about how difficult it is to get a job. it's not getting any easier, is it, in radio? There's nowhere else you could go, is there, other than Five Live? I mean, have you ever thought, do you know what, I could turn my back on commercial radio. I could go to the BBC if they asked me.
Well, in the last, I've been here 15 years, more than that actually, and there's been three opportunities for me to go to Five Live, and I've not really been interested, to be honest. You know, a couple of the times I listened to what was being offered, and I'm not talking about money, that's kind of irrelevant to a certain extent. As long as I can pay my bills, I'm fine. I'm talking about the quality of the job. And I understand what you're saying about how there's nowhere else I could go, and in some senses that worries me, because if we get taken over tomorrow and it becomes a country and western station, I'll add it. So I'll be flipping burgers and shaking fries, you know. So but I'm philosophical about it, and from day one here I thought, this is, I feel comfortable with this place, you know. If it all ends tomorrow for me here, I've had a great time. That's the way I look at it. But also, you know, I've got to keep working hard at doing what I'm doing, because that's why I've stayed here. And so if I keep doing it, there'll be less chance of me losing my job. I do, you know, I do fear about it. I, you know, I have no ego that says, well, you're irreplaceable. Far from it. You know, I feel lucky every day I come in here. But in terms of where to go, you know, people have talked about TV. I've done a little bit of TV. You'll know. It's not radio. And when you, as I told you, I grew up with this dream of being involved in radio, on the radio. And I am. And if, you know, TV money is ridiculous, sometimes it's impossible to turn down. But I don't get excited by that, you know. But this job, every day, I still get excited about it.
I was just at Radio 2, where they were doing the next edition of Sounds of the 80s, which they do as a radio show, but they do it in the one show studio so that it's available on the red button. And Sarah Cox has to do the presentation. Mm. And she was saying, in so many words, I'd much rather just do this on the radio, you know, really. The radio is my favourite medium. I can do the telly, but, you know, there's a huge compromise once you have to be filmed and get the makeup on, you know, and be a body on a camera rather than a voice on a microphone.
Oh, it's the lack of spontaneity as well. All of that stuff, it's so slow. There's less time. There's more pressures time-wise. It just feels, this place in particular, feels like a good fit for me, and you know, an opinionated football fan. This, it belongs at Talk Sport, doesn't it, really?
It does, really. So yeah. Last question, Adrian. Your best moment on air? What's the thing you look back on and think, that was great fun?
I go out to games every Saturday, because I do the drive show in the week and Saturday afternoons. I love going to games and doing that show. It's fast moving. But in terms of one particular moment, it would have to be when Jamie Carragher called into the show. I'm a passionate England fan. Any footballer who retires early from international duty, unless it's down
you'd
to
had
injuries,
a go at him, hadn't you?
I called him a bottler on air. And
that's bottler?
Yeah.
He's bigger than you, Adrian. Yeah,
well, I found that out. So he phoned in, because it says in his book, actually, he was driving along, he'd been to training, driving along, listening, and thinking, who are they talking about? Who's he calling a bottler? And then he realised it was him. So I was doing the show with Mickey Quinn. I don't think they know each other, but they're obviously from Liverpool. So he phoned the studio and spoke to Quinny and said, get me on air. And Quinny said to him, you can come on air, but you're not allowed to swear. So he came on air.
Tough.
And it was highly confrontational. It was a bit, I wouldn't say it was difficult, but we agreed to disagree in the end. But he challenged me to go to Liverpool and say it to his face. And I did. We did a show from a bar he had up there. And he was great. He was really good. But that was, it's a moment everybody talks to me about. Everybody asks me about. And he always says to me that he gets asked, first of all, about Istanbul. Secondly, about that phone call to TalkSport.
Can we hear a clip?
Have we got it now? Yeah.
I phoned up on my way to train and listened to your show. Normally a good show until you start rabbiting on this afternoon about being a bit of a bottler. It'd be interesting to see if you've got any bottling come down to Anfield or Melwood and, you know, say it to me and we'll see what happens.
I'd say it to your face and I'll say it to you now.
You,
I want to know why you're even...
What, come down to Anfield on a Champions League game or whatever and we'll see them, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
You can say whatever. You can say these other players about them. Not a problem. Everyone's got opinions. That's football. Not a problem. McLaren's opinion if he plays someone else, not a problem with him at all. But don't ever call me a bottler on radio in front of all thousands of people listening to you.
So why are you even thinking about quitting international football?
Because there's that many people who he's played ahead of me. And as I said, I've got no... If he brings someone else, it's a game of opinions. But when you're at my age, they're all younger than me. They're all going to improve, but maybe I won't at that age.
But you... Yeah.
And I got to the Champions League final. There's not much more you can do in club football, obviously win it, but we've done that a couple of years ago. He played Ledley King, who is a top player, but he's been injured all season. So how would you feel in my situation there? What would you do?
I'd feel like proving myself and getting a stomach for the fight going and going for
proving
it.
Proving yourself? Yeah. That's what I'm 29. I've been doing it for 8 years, and obviously I haven't proved it enough. So it's not going to change now, is it? It's not as if I've just got in the squad and I've jumped out. So when you talk about proving yourself, and who's the other fella who was saying, oh, I've just jacked it in because he's probably got his contract at 100 grand a week at Liverpool? Who's he?
He reads our sports bulletins.
He's the news reader.
Well, hang on, Jamie, he's a football fan. He's a football fan, an England fan, who's entitled to his opinion.
Jamie's...
And none of you are more a football fan than me, so don't try me. If I've got him, someone who's more interested in money.
Jamie, in some senses, when some of these lads who work here haven't played a professional at the highest level... No, Jamie, but don't understand. I mean, I've been in a position not as big as your decision you've made, but on a club level where I wasn't getting a game, and I had to move on. And that's what players do at club level. They move on, get a transfer, because they're not in the first team. It's a similar thing at international level. But at 29, will you ever regret this decision?
Well, time will tell, won't it? But I mean, who knows? But as I said, the main thing for me now is to concentrate on my Liverpool career. But I mean, when it's it doesn't matter what. You know, it's football, it could be anything. Either you're a radio presenter or whatever. If you didn't feel you were getting your chances, you'd move to another station, wouldn't you, if you wanted to be the top man on your radio?
I tell you what, Jamie, Jamie, 5 minutes ago, we nearly did move to another station because he bottled it when you come on.
One of Adrian's best moments. That's fantastic, isn't it?
You're proud of that.
Yeah, I am. Proud of the aftermath as well. But in terms of making good radio, which is what we're in this business for, radio that people want to listen to, the idea is you have those opinions, people can challenge you, and whether it's your ordinary football fan who goes to watch Luton Town every week, or it's Jamie Carragher who's played for Liverpool in England and won the European Cup, they can all challenge your opinions. It's a good forum like that. I love it.
Adrian Durham, congratulations on your 25 years. Here's to another 25. Thanks for joining us on the Radio Today programme.
Thank you very much.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
David Lloyd. Radio Moments.
We start this week 3 years ago and a sudden change at Capital London.
I'd love to check out our whole back catalogue.
She's got a big back catalogue.
You get me?
Hits, baby.
Okay, I've selected the first 30 minutes of music for Roberto's show. They've let me do that. It's cool. You're going to love it. It is Friday, gang!
Friday!
Have a cracker. Have a humdinger of a swinger. Dan's up next with the news.
Johnny and Lisa. Capital Breakfast.
Johnny Vaughan suddenly leaving the breakfast show on Capital London after 7 years this week in 2011. And this chap ended his stint on the BBC Top 40 this week 12 years ago.
Number one at 40 is down 8 for Bitter McLean over the river. 39 down 4, Ultimate Chaos, Show a Little Love. 38 down 15, Simple Minds, Hypnotised. 37 is down 21 for Hole with Gold.
Mark Goodyear, whose final chart was aired this week in 2002 after 7 years. He was one of the very few presenters to have two stints on the chart.
Britain's number one.
This week in 1922, radio arrived formally in Manchester as 2ZY launched.
Well, as far as we were concerned, it was exciting, to say the least of it. You see, we had equipment there. Nobody knew an awful lot about it. We'd been trying experiment broadcasts for some days before, and we had fairly good reports, some from local people, some from quite a distance. If we got something good, then everybody said, "Ooh, hold it, don't alter anything." And very likely the next night was a washout. Anyway, that night, it had worked the day before. We had our fingers crossed. And when the deadline came, we breathed a prayer, I think, and put the switch in. And it worked. Everybody thought we were wizards.
Hugh Bell, an engineer from Metropolitan Vickers, one of the companies which made up that new BBC company. It took a further 11 years until 1933 that the first woman was trusted with the news. She was Sheila Borrett.
Well, we know that she was married to Giles Borrett, he was a retired naval officer. She was an actress and she'd come into the BBC to do radio plays and that sort of thing. And I think that she must have wanted to be an announcer because it looks like she applied for the job and then underwent one of these very strict tests that they would have done to become an announcer. And she was given the job, and you get the impression that the BBC were quite excited about having a woman announcer, and it was really bigged up in the press, and there was huge excitement about her coming in.
BBC historian Kate Murphy speaking on Sheila Borrett, who was the first female newsreader on national radio this week, 81 years ago. They received 10,000 letters of complaint, mostly from women, we're told. She lasted 3 months in her new job, but she later went on to success. Another famous newsreading voice died this week 9 years ago.
Good morning from John Timpson in Brighton, where at 10 to 3 this morning, an explosion extensively damaged the Grand Hotel in which the Prime Minister...
Somebody said of Brian, he was the irritant, and of John, he was the emollient one. And I think that sums them up very well. Brian was the gritty, cheeky, chappy northerner, and John Timpson was not the posh southerner, but he was more sort of... He had a kinder way of interviewing people. Brian was a terrier.
Former Today presenter Sue McGregor recalling Brian Redhead's appearance on the programme alongside John Timpson, who died aged 77 this week in 2005. He'd hosted Today for 16 years. 1983 now, and Kenny Everett's final show on Radio 2. He'd sounded a bit like this.
It's 26 minutes to 12 right here on 2, and guess what? It's Newey time!
Yeah!
This is gonna be a monster.
Oh, Superman.
Love that song. Kenny Everett on Radio 2. He hosted his last show there 31 years ago. How fresh does that sound? 1988 now, and another of those AM oldies splits as Brunel Radio sees the medium wave frequencies from GWR.
That's the day on Brunel, the station with the Rolls-Royce sound and the station that's backed by a £1 million investment. Join us. Life on the medium wave will never be the same.
The start of GWR's Brunel Radio this week, 26 years ago. Later Brunel Classic Gold, later Classic Gold, then Gold, now Smooth. Lily Bolero is a familiar BBC call sign now. It's a 300-year-old melody adopted this week in 1955 as an ident for the World Service in English. The later 1970 familiar version was recorded by David Cox, whose son Chris also worked for the BBC.
Well, I think it was recorded in the basement of Broadcasting House. My father, who was a music producer then, he was producing a session of the BBC Concert Orchestra, who were making theme tunes for the Japanese service at the BBC World Service. It just so happened that there was half an hour or so spare at the end of the session, and my father presented them all with their parts from a score which he'd written out in longhand, and said to them, right, here, guys, would you mind playing this? And he conducted them, and the very first take which the BBC Concert Orchestra made of my father's arrangement of Lily Bolero is the one you hear today on the World Service.
Happy birthday, Lily. It's an incredible 15 years now since the first truly digital commercial radio stations launched, The Core and Planet Rock on the new Digital One multiplex.
This is a rock block. It's like Desert Island Discs without that old bird. Planet Rock. 30 years ago, we scared your parents. Now we scare your kids. Planet Rock, UK's classic rock station.
That station survives to this day, now also on FM in the Midlands. Happy 15th birthday, Planet Rock. So, with the death of Barry Aldiss this week, 32 years ago...
This is Radio Luxembourg, your station of the stars.
Susan Ray knocking over the angle poise...
Shares on you.
...during a Radio 4 news bulletin 3 years ago...
My apologies for the crash at the beginning of this summary. My desk lamp fell over. BBC News.
Power FM in Hampshire becoming Galaxy South Coast 6 years ago...
Everything in life evolves.
The UK theme airing for the first time on Radio 4 36 years ago...
The new Radio 4 opening music.
And the very first Radio Moments podcast like this 3 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments, and I reckon that calls for a new jingle, surely.
Right, well, we'll start work on that straight away, David. Thank you for that. Thank you to Adrian Durham. Thank you to everybody at the Salford International Media Festival. This has been a TDC production. Thanks for listening. We'll have more next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.